Welcome to Dreamful Podcast, bedtime stories for slumber. I've now been creating this podcast for 7 years, which really feels surreal. And for that, I'd like to thank all of my supporters who have made this journey possible. Podcasting takes a lot of work. And to be honest with you, when it gets hard, inevitably I get a message or a new subscriber. And it's those kind of notifications and messages and emails that make me feel like I never want to stop. So thank you all so much. If you want to become a subscriber, I have well over 100 bonus episodes waiting for you. So just visit dreamfulstories.com and on the support page, find a link to become a Buzzsprout supporter or subscribe via Supercast if you listen on Spotify. I also have a subscription on Apple Podcasts and Patreon, so you can find it anywhere. If you know anything about this show, you'll know that the stories that I read are all in the public domain. And the fun thing about entering a new year is that new works enter the public domain. And wouldn't you know it, the first 4 books of Nancy Drew are now available to everyone. And I couldn't be more excited. So tonight I will be reading from the book of Nancy Drew. So tonight, I will be reading from the Nancy Drew mystery, The Hidden Staircase. So, snuggle up in your blankets and have sweet dreams. I declare, I don't know what makes me so nervous this afternoon. I have the strangest feeling, just as though something were about to happen. As Nancy Drew expressed the thought aloud, she tossed aside a book she'd been trying to read and restlessly crossed the living room to glance out the window. She was alone in the big house, for her father, Carson Drew, had been called out of the city on an important law case, and Hannah Gruen, the housekeeper, had taken her day off. Usually, Nancy enjoyed a book, but on this particular afternoon, she had been unable to interest herself in anything. For no apparent reason, she felt nervous and uneasy. As she stood at the window, her eyes rested for a moment upon an old-fashioned mantel clock above the fireplace. The timepiece aroused pleasant memories, for it had been given to her as a reward for her service in solving a baffling mystery. Nancy smiled. "I know what's the matter with me," she told herself. "I'm aching for another adventure. That's all the good it will do me, too." With a sigh of resignation, she again settled herself in a comfortable chair and took up her book. She had read scarcely a page when her attention was attracted by the sound of a heavy step on the front veranda. The doorbell rang sharply. There was an electric something about the ring, which was arresting. Startling. Before Nancy could get up from the chair, the bell rang a second time. She dropped her book and hurried to the door. Opening it, she stood face to face with a man she had never seen before. He was unusually tall and thin, with spindling legs, which gave him the appearance of a towering scarecrow. The illusion was heightened by his clothing, which was ill-fitting and several seasons out of style. Nancy could not help but notice several grease spots on his coat. However, it was not the man's clothing or miserly appearance which repulsed her, but rather his unpleasant face. He had sharp, piercing eyes, which seemed to bore into her. Nancy was permitted but an instant to appraise her visitor, for as she opened the door, he stepped inside without waiting for an invitation. This rude action somewhat nonplussed her, but she was too polite to show her displeasure. "I am Nathan Gombett of Cliffwood," the man told her bluntly. "I want to see Carson Drew." "My father isn't here now," Nancy explained quietly. "Where is he?" Nancy did not like the brusque way Nathan Gombett had of asking questions, but she answered him politely. "Out of town on business."
"I must see him."
"I'm very sorry," Nancy returned patiently. "But it is impossible. He won't be back until late this evening. If you come back tomorrow..."
"Tomorrow won't do. I want to see him now," he demanded.
"Can't you understand that my father is out of town?" Nancy asked, a trifle tartly, for she was beginning to be irritated. "If you want to leave a message, I'll give it to him as soon as he comes in."
"I don't want to leave a message. I came after those papers." "Did your father leave them for me?"
"I don't know what papers you mean."
"Oh, you don't, eh? Well, your father knows, all right. Just ask him about Nathan Gombett's property rights on the river, and he'll tell you all the nasty deal he and his friends tried to slip over on me."
"What are you talking about?" Nancy demanded sharply. "Have you lost your senses?"
"I've just come to him as what I've done. Maybe you don't know about it, but I own some property down along the river. Your father introduced me to sell a piece of it at a ridiculously low figure. The land is worth several times what he paid me for it. I'm not going to let anyone put over a raw deal like that. I want the deed back, or my price. And Carson Drew is going to give it to me too."
"You don't know what you are saying," Nancy said icily. "My father wouldn't cheat anyone out of a cent."
"Oh no?" Nathan exclaimed sarcastically. "I suppose he's in business for his health."
"He's not in the business of taking what doesn't belong to him. That's certain," Nancy retorted hotly. "If you have anything coming to you, I'm sure it will be turned over to you just as soon as my father returns."
"Just as soon as he returns. That's good," Nathan sneered. "Like as he's not hiding somewhere in this house this very minute."
"How dare you insinuate such a thing?" Nancy cried angrily. "I'm alone in the house." The instant she had divulged the information, she could have bitten her tongue.
"Alone, eh? Well, maybe I was mistaken about your father being here. But it's the truth I've been telling you about those papers. He cheated me out of a pile of money."
"It isn't the truth, and you know it. I've listened to you just as long as I intend to. You ought to be ashamed to come here and say such insulting things about my father. Now I wish you'd go."
"I'll not stir until I get my papers."
"I've told you I don't know a thing about your old papers."
"They're here someplace. I know they're in the house."
"Will you kindly leave?"
"Just try to put me out if you think you can," Nathan Gombett said, with an unpleasant leer. "You know more about those papers than you let on."
"You're crazy," Nancy snapped. She was so exasperated that she could not keep her temper in check. Nathan Gombett's eyes narrowed to mere slits, and a cruel look came over his face.
"Get those papers for me," he commanded harshly. Nancy was aware that her father sometimes kept valuable papers in his desk, but she had no intention of handing any of them to this man. She had never heard her father mention the documents in question, but she had no doubt that Gambit was trying to get something which did not belong to him. Although frightened at the man's strange conduct, she faced him boldly. "I'll not give you anything. Now get out of here." "All right. If you'll not hand over the papers, I'll just have a look around for myself." A crafty look had come into the man's eyes. As he spoke, he moved toward the study which adjoined the living room. From where he had been standing, Carson Drew's desk was in plain sight. "Don't you dare go in there," Nancy cried indignantly.
"Oh, so that's where the papers are. I thought as much."
Half a dozen long strides took Nathan Gambit across the room and into the study. Reaching the desk, he jerked open a drawer and began pawing through it. "Stop that!" Angrily, Nancy grasped the man by the coat and pulled him away from the desk. "You get out of here, or I'll call the police." With one vicious jerk, Nathan Gambit freed himself and wheeled upon her. His face was convulsed with rage, and Nancy saw that he was desperate. Instinctively, she threw up her hands to ward off a blow. Nathan Gambit did not strike Nancy Drew, although for an instant, it appeared that he intended to do so. He remained motionless, regarding her with a hatred he made no effort to conceal. His face was distorted, and he stood in a half-crouched position, like an animal about to pounce upon his prey. Nancy knew that she must act quickly, for she saw the man was beside himself with rage. Unless she handed over the papers he demanded, she did not doubt that he would attempt to do her bodily injury. She must depend upon her own wits to save her, for there was no one within calling distance. If only she could reach the telephone. As the thought came to her, her eyes rested for a moment on the instrument. Nathan Gambit saw the look and understood that she intended to carry out her threat to telephone the authorities. His lips parted in an ugly snarl.
"Call the police, will you?" "Oh no, my little lady. You won't do that."
He made a vicious lunge for her, but she was too quick for him. As he reached out to grab her, she stepped to one side and, neatly eluding his claw-like hands, placed the table between them. She caught up the telephone receiver. Gambit saw that Nancy Drew was not to be bluffed, and instantly a change came over him. The look of anger on his face changed to one of genuine fear.
"Don't telephone," he begged almost childishly. "I'll go."
Nancy hesitated, undecided in her course. She had no wish to start a scandal in River Heights by calling the attention of the police to the threats the man had made, for she realized that the resulting publicity might not do her father any good. Yet she wondered if she could trust the man to keep his word. "All right, then go," she said curtly, without relinquishing her hold on the telephone. I'll give you 20 seconds to get out of here. If I see you hanging around the house, I'll call the police. Hastily, Nathan Gombit picked up his hat, and with a last glance toward Carson Drew's desk, turned to leave. Nancy followed him from the study, watching him closely, lest he try to work a trick upon her. In the doorway, the man paused and looked back. "I'll have my rights before I get through," he muttered. "Your father ain't seen the last of this. Not by jugful." Slamming the door behind him, he tramped across the porch and was gone. From the living room window, Nancy watched him until he disappeared beyond the corner. "I almost wish I'd call the police," she thought. The idea of saying the things he did about Dad. He thought he could scare me into giving him those papers. The encounter disturbed her considerably, for she realized that in Nathan Gombit, her father could have a troublesome enemy. She was convinced that the man was without scruples. Unquestionably, his accusations were entirely false. But if he spread his story about River Heights, undiscerning persons might accept it as fact. As former district attorney at River Heights, a city in the Middle West, Carson Drew had built up an enviable reputation for himself. But the character of his work was such that he had made enemies as well as staunch friends. Those whom he had antagonized were ever on the lookout for an opportunity to undermine the reputation he had made for himself. So far, Carson Drew had more than held his own against the unscrupulous persons, for he was known as a fighter. Nancy was Carson Drew's only child, but though she had been indulged, she had never been spoiled. She was an unusually pretty girl, fair of skin, with friendly blue eyes, and golden curly hair. Her friends declared that she was as clever as she was attractive. Since the death of her mother a number of years before, Nancy had found it necessary to be resourceful and efficient. Not only had she assumed the management of the Drew household, but she took a keen interest in her father's law cases, especially those which smacked of mystery. She had been present at a number of interviews with noted detectives, and her father declared she had a natural talent for digging into interesting cases. Only the summer before, she had taken it upon her own slender shoulders to solve a mystery which had baffled capable lawyers. When no one could locate Josiah Crowley's missing will, Nancy, in an effort to aid Abigail Rowan and Allie and Grace Horner, had taken over the task herself. Her thrilling adventures, which included an encounter with robbers, are told in that first volume of the series, entitled Secret of the Old Clock. Of late, Nancy Drew had longed for another exciting experience, which would give her an opportunity to use her wits, little dreaming of what was in store for her. Yet, as she turned slowly away from the window, after watching Nathan Gombit vanish down the street, she had a certain premonition of trouble ahead. If I hadn't threatened to call the police, that man would have injured me, she thought. I do wish Father were here. I want to tell him about Nathan Gombit and the threat he made. It wouldn't surprise me if he should try to make trouble. Nancy was indeed disturbed Never for an instant did she credit any of the statements the man had made, but from his appearance and actions, she was inclined to believe that he would stoop to anything in order to gain his end. He has some dishonest scheme up his sleeve, she assured herself. Dad will explain everything when he comes home. Try as she would, she could not forget the unpleasant interview. Her afternoon was completely ruined. In vain, she tried to read. After a time, she busied herself with some sewing, but had to rip nearly everything out. It's no use, she sighed. I can't keep my mind on what I'm doing. I wish someone would come home. This house is getting on my nerves. Glancing at the clock, Nancy saw that it was only 4 o'clock. Hannah would not return for at least an hour, and she could not expect her father until late evening. Folding up her sewing, she arose and crossed over to the desk. She regarded it speculatively. Gambit said it was a deed he wanted, she told herself. If it's actually here, I think I'd better find it and put it in the safe. She seated herself before the desk and, opening a drawer, began to go over the papers carefully. As she examined the first document she picked up, there came a sharp ring of the doorbell. So unexpected was the noise that Nancy started. What could it mean? Had Nathan Gambit returned to make more trouble? Quickly thrusting the papers back into the desk, she closed down the top and locked it. Then she made her way resolutely to the front door. Nancy Drew swung open the heavy oak door, fully expecting to see Nathan Gambit on the veranda. She had braced herself for another unpleasant ordeal, but when she saw that her fears were groundless, her face relaxed into a pleasant smile. Allie Horner, she exclaimed enthusiastically. What a scare you gave me. Meaning that I look a fright? Allie bantered. Mercy, no. I can't remember that I ever saw you looking better in your life. The compliment was a sincere one. In the last few months, plenty of good food and freedom from worry had done wonders for Allie. She had grown becomingly plump, and there were roses in her cheeks. Her eyes were bright, and she seemed to have an overabundance of vitality. Nancy could remember the day when she first met Allie Horner and her sister Grace. They lived on a farm along the river road, and at the time were undernourished and beset with financial worries. Through Nancy's efforts, the girls had come into inheritance, and their troubles had vanished. They still resided on the river road, but they had used a portion of their income to modernize the place, with the result that it was considered a model farm. Do come into the living room, Allie, Nancy urged cordially. It's been months since I saw you last. Grace and I don't go to town very often. Too busy, I suppose. But I'm so glad you came today. I've been lonesome for someone to talk with. I can't stay very long, Nancy. I dropped in to give you a little present. A present? Yes. It's not much of a gift, I'm afraid. Allie smiled apologetically as she thrust 2 packages into Nancy's hands. Just a chicken for your Sunday dinner and 2 dozen eggs. Why, that's a fine gift, Allie. You're never sure of getting fresh eggs when you buy them at the grocery store. You have to take the fresh part on trust, and sometimes your trust is betrayed. I think you'll find these eggs fresh.
I gathered them this morning. After thanking Allie for the gift, Nancy carried the chicken and the eggs to the kitchen and placed them in the electrical refrigerator. Returning to the living room, she pulled her chair up close to Allie's, and the two girls settled themselves for a chat. "Tell me about everything," Nancy commanded. "How is your sister?" "Oh, Grace is fine, and fairly rolling in wealth," Allie declared proudly. "She wanted to come with me this afternoon, but she couldn't take the time from her work. Dressmaking has picked up tremendously, and she has more orders than she can fill. You should see her new electric sewing machine." "I suppose you've made great changes since I last visited your place?" "Oh, yes. We get a big kick out of landscaping everything. We've gone in for grand names. We call our place the Chicken Ranch now. I've had wonderful luck with my leghorns, and I intend to double my flock next year." As Allie spoke, her eyes came to rest upon the old-fashioned metal clock. "Every time I see that old clock, I think of how much you did for all of us," she said quietly to Nancy. "I wish you would permit Grace and me to give you a more suitable reward." "But the clock is all I want. Really it is," Nancy protested. "You're the strangest girl I ever knew," Allie sighed. "Oh well, I know it won't do any good to urge you, so I'll drop the matter. Tell me about yourself." "There's nothing to tell." "Then you're not involved in any more mysteries?" "Not so far as I know," Nancy laughed. Then the smile faded from her face as she regarded Allie seriously. "Still, an odd thing did happen this afternoon, just a few minutes before you arrived. Tell me about it." "Well, a strange man came to the door and asked to see my father. When I told him Dad was out of town on important business, he didn't believe me. He ranted a lot about his property rights on the river, whatever that may mean. He claimed that he had been cheated out of some money. If I hadn't threatened to call the police, he would have gone through everything in Dad's desk." "You've no idea who the man was?" "I never saw him before, but he gave his name as Nathan Gombit."
"Nathan Gombit?"
"Yes. Do you know him?"
"Well, rather, he used to buy eggs and chickens from me until I told him not to come back anymore. He's a regular miser if there ever was one. He has a home over in Cliffwood." "I suspect he was a miser from his appearance." "You can't trust him out of your sight. One day after I sold him 5 dozen eggs, I turned my back for a minute, and he tried to slip an extra dozen into the crate. He claims my father cheated him out of his property rights." Allie laughed shortly. "Knowing Nathan as I do, I'd be quicker to think he was trying to cheat your father. What property does he mean?"
"I don't know anything about it, except that it's along the river."
"Must be the property that was condemned for the railroad bridge," Allie suggested.
"Did the bridge go up on Gombit's land?"
"As I recall it, he sold a strip of land on either side of the river. Then after the bridge went up, he claimed the railroad had built over its boundary line."
"Why didn't he find that out before the bridge was finished?"
"Oh, no one believes his claim, Nancy. The land was carefully surveyed, you know. It's my personal opinion. Nathan Gombit isn't perfectly right in his mind."
"You mean he's..." "Oh, I wouldn't go so far as to say he's crazy, Nancy. But he is money mad. It's an obsession with him that someone is trying to cheat him out of something. He went nearly daffy when the bridge went up. He even threatened to blow it up if they didn't pay him his price."
"Not to be arrested. It's dangerous to have him at large."
Yes, I think so myself. Of course, it's only a rumor about his threat to blow up the bridge. But I believe he said it all right.
So do I, after the way he acted this afternoon.
He'll bear watching.
Ellie nodded soberly.
You're going to tell your father, aren't you?
Ellie queried.
Oh, yes. Just as soon as he gets home.
The girls talked for some time, and then Ellie Horner announced that she must leave.
I have a notion to ride out into the country with you and hike back, Nancy told her.
Father won't be back for several hours yet, and I'm tired of sitting in the house with nothing to do.
I wish you would come with me, Ellie urged.
All right. Wait until I get my hiking boots and I'll do it.
Nancy left the room and soon returned dressed for hiking. After locking the doors and windows, she left the house with Ellie.
How do you like our new automobile? Ellie demanded, as she paused in front of a roadster, which was parked at the curbing.
Grace and I bought it last week.
It's a beauty, Nancy replied.
You didn't tell me about that.
I intended to, but we got to talking about Nathan Gombit and I forgot.
The two girls sprang into the roadster, and Ellie took the wheel. She drove rather slowly, for as yet, she was not perfectly familiar with the various controls. When they came to the Muskoka River, Nancy thanked Ellie for the ride and expressed the intention of hiking back.
If I walk right along, I'll get home before dark, she assured Ellie as she stepped from the roadster.
Nancy Drew watched Ellie out of sight and then struck off at a brisk pace along the river.
A walk will do me good, she told herself. It may help me get rid of my nervousness.
Although the day was warm, there was a cool breeze blowing along the river, and Nancy found the air invigorating. She swung blithely along, pausing occasionally to skip a tiny stone out into the water, or to watch a school of minnows in the shallows near shore. After a time, the path led through thick bushes and tall trees. When she emerged into the clearing again, she saw, less than 300 yards ahead of her, a gigantic arc of iron and steel that stretched across the Muskoka River. It was the first time Nancy had ever seen the new railroad bridge at close range, and she gave a cry of interest. Hurrying on, she climbed over a fence, which marked the boundary of the railroad, right of way, and came to the tracks. There she paused and surveyed the bridge with awe. It must have cost a mint of money, she thought. As she was considering the remarkable engineering feat which the bridge represented, a shrill locomotive whistle caused her to wheel about. The block signal was down, and she knew a train was approaching from the west. She moved hastily to a safe distance from the tracks, with a fascination which was tinged with horror. She watched a long, heavy eastbound flyer as it roared around the bend, like a mighty monster charged down upon the railroad bridge. What if Nathan Gombit dared to carry out his threat? She asked herself with a shudder. Even after the flyer had clattered safely across the bridge and had vanished in a cloud of smoke, Nancy could not shake off the uneasy feeling which had taken possession of her. Now that she had viewed the bridge, she had a graphic picture in her mind of the damage Gambit could accomplish if he were so inclined. As she turned away and walked slowly on toward her home, she lost herself in sober reflection. Nathan Gambit is a dangerous man. That's certain, she told herself. If only there were some way to put him behind prison bars before he harms anyone.
Thank you. Thank you.